Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Your Own Personal Beatles, episode 2 of our new series, series 3. My name's Jack Pelling and with me as ever, Robin. How are you, mate?
Yes, good. Thanks. It's Robin Allender here. Nice to be here.
Very nice to be here. Nice to be back. Yeah. We've had some lovely messages since we returned with Sam Carter last week, so thank you for all of them. We'll go through a little bit of correspondence in a little while. But first of all, we'll introduce our guest for this week, who's the fantastic comedian Anya Magliano, who came to chat to us about a month ago off the back of some sold-out runs at the Edinburgh Festival. And she's just recently done another sold-out run at the Soho Theatre and is going to be playing the Leicester Square Theatre soon. And we had a terrific chat with her.
Yeah, she's Anya's brilliant. She's so funny. She's such a natural performer, just so confident on stage. And yeah, a lot of Beatles love as well. Some really interesting chats about Hard Day's Night. I really like the perspective yeah. of kind of a former One Direction fan, because I think yes. that's just so important to the Beatles story, is the kind of the fandom of that age group. So I thought that was a really nice thing to touch on there.
Yeah, and a lot of similarities to the sort of the teenage mania that sort of remains the same throughout the ages.
Yeah.
But we talked to her. She's also the second guest we've had who's got a cat named after Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
We also chat to her about sort of having an old soul, and as a very funny chat about a slightly bizarre youth theatre production of a Beatles musical at the Royal Albert Hall.
Even when we watched the video, I still wasn't convinced that she hadn't somehow made it up. It's almost too bizarre to kind of get your head around. But
yeah, she seemed unsure, and she was in it.
Yeah. But it's great. It's quite funny.
It's brilliant, yeah.
We do include a clip of it, and we'll post the link as well if you want to watch it on YouTube. There's a kind of abridged version on YouTube, isn't there?
Absolutely there is, yeah. It makes for quite strange viewing. Yeah. Great that it was documented, though, and it does exist.
Yeah.
It's a really, really fun chat. We'll be cracking on with that in just a minute. And if you do, I mean, I'm absolutely sure that by the end of this, you'll be convinced of how brilliant Anya is if you haven't seen her stuff already. So highly recommend going to check out her show at the Leicester Square Theatre, which is in November. But before then, we'll crack on with a bit of... Do you want to do our new Weekly Wings segment first?
Yeah, Weekly Wings. We've got a brand new jingle, which I made. Take it away.
Take it away. Underused these days, take it away.
Yeah, take it away. So there you go. That was the Weekly Wings jingle. Hope you enjoyed it. A couple of nods to some Wings classics in there.
Yeah. What have we got in there? We've got something that's appearing in this song, which is the leaping octave bass line that
that's
a big
true.
Fan of in the 70s. Bit of Band on the Run, bit of
Let 'Em In. But yeah, the song we're talking about, Weekly Wings, is kind of interesting is it a Wings song? But it's Little Woman Love, which was the B-side to Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Yeah.
And it was recorded during the Ram sessions. So you can actually hear it on the Ram archive collection and on Red
That's
Rose
how
Speedway.
I know it. Always thought it was a Paul and Linda song more than a Wings song, but it's kind of both really, isn't it?
I guess the fact it was released under the name Wings, but it feels very Ram, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
In that kind of...
Sonically, it's very ramshackle.
Yeah. But the reason I love it is because it's just another example of Paul I'm trying not to use the phrase tossing off here, but I don't know how else to describe it. But like just being able to just seemingly just, yeah, just come up with these little pop gems and just pop it on a B-side. Mm. But it's just the kind of consistency of his songwriting throughout. Yeah. And it's really funky. And I think it's kind of, it's not too dissimilar from Lady Madonna in its kind of groove.
No, I mean, the bass line's pretty much the same, but faster in a slightly different key. But
it's just this kind of effortlessness of it, really, that it was just, it sounds like it was written on the spot.
Yeah.
You know, the lyrics don't really mean anything, but they don't have to. And it's just like, it just really rocks.
It's a great song. 2 minutes.
Yeah. It's a really good one. And also, it's just so much better than Mary Had a Little Lamb as well.
I've got a bit of a soft spot for Mary Had a Little Lamb, apart from the fact that it is Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Yeah.
I like the sort of the musicality of it.
I do like the way it was kind of post Give Ireland Back to the Irish. It was like, what's the safest kind of area I could go to? But yeah, let's do a nursery rhyme. But I was thinking, when you compare Little Woman Love to a lot of Wings songs can kind of have that quite stodgy mid-tempo 70s thing, or can be that kind of glam rock kind of kind of thing. So it's just kind of nice to have this really upbeat kind of rocker there.
Yeah. It's part of a strange medley. Have you seen the medley version of He Did It? Do you know that 70s TV show that they did? And he did a version of this on the Rhodes.
Ah, right.
Which is a medley with Seamoon. And Seamoon is kind of guilty of being that, what you've just mentioned. But the Rhodes version is really cool.
Yeah, oh, nice. I'll check that out.
Again, we mentioned last week sort of Stevie Wonder kind of was obviously a bit of an influence around those times. And it's really funky. It's not a million miles away from being quite sort of Stonesy, actually.
Mm, yeah.
Especially with bongos and... I don't think we've ever seen, you know, we've had conversations since the beginning of this podcast about funky Beatles records and Matthew E. White, his theory that the Beatles were never funky. But this is about as funky as Beatles related stuff gets.
Well, I mean, if we're going to reopen this whole funk debate, then the funkiest Beatles related song is On Ram, and it's Three Legs, the end bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's really funky.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I love because you came to Ram a little bit later in life, didn't you? Similar to me, yeah.
Yeah, I just knew a few songs here and there, but it probably wasn't until we started the podcast that I gave it a proper listen all the way through, and you know, learning how it coheres as an album, and it's just got so many kind of moods. It seems so ahead of its time. There are bits of it that sound like Grizzly Bear, like that kind of noughties kind of folk revival thing that was going on in the noughties, that kind of very DIY sound and kind of intricate chamber pop sound as well.
Yeah.
And it's just great, really funny as well. And it's a brilliant album, obviously.
There we go. Another one with the seal of approval. Our new feature. Good things with Jack
good
and
things.
Marvin.
Yeah.
So before we crack on, we'll read out a little bit of an email. We should mention as well that the Patreon is back. And soon I think we're going to allow you to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcast as well, because that just makes life a bit easier. And I think we are going to do some more bonus episodes. So if you do want to get bonus episodes and ad-free episodes and episodes earlier than everyone else, then you can sign up by going to patreon.com/personalbeatles. Or very soon, hopefully, you'll be able to do that within your Apple Podcasts feed. And I think for our first one, we're going to be chatting about the Revolver Super Deluxe, which is coming at the end of this month. So we'll do a special episode all about that. But right now, we'll just read out an email that we got from a person called Norrie Dingwall from Edinburgh. And it's really lovely, this one. They say, "Hi, Jack and Robin. It's so good to see that you're back for another series. It's been great to listen to how the Beatles have affected people in different ways. I was born in 1954, so it was around when Beatlemania swallowed the world, although I was probably a bit too young for it to affect me that way. However, I was a teenager when their later albums came out, so they became an influential soundtrack to my life. Their solo albums followed, never disappointing." I wouldn't say never. I went to art college in the 80s and my work was influenced by the music that would stick in my head, mainly McCartney. I've attached three photos of my work from that period. One is a painting and the other two are cut cardboard. I hope they give you another link to how the Beatles influenced not just music. Keep up the good work. Norrie Dingwall. Still a Beatles fan. And these are named after Wings at the Speed of Sound, Yesterday, and Maybe I'm Amazed. And they're absolutely brilliant. So we'll pop these on our Instagram, which is @personalbeatles, so you can have a look at them. But really loved looking at them. I really like the cut cardboard ones. They look incredible.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks for writing in. That's great.
And if you want to get in touch, you can email jack@homespunsounds.com and share your Beatles journey with us or whatever leaps to mind.
I did want to just do one quick thing if there's time in the intro. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Radio 3 this morning, as per, and they played a really nice guitar and orchestral arrangement of Here Comes the Sun, which was performed by Miloš Karadaglić, and it's from his album Blackbird, which is an album of Beatles covers, which is definitely worth checking out. The version of Blackbird as well is great. I think there are about 12 songs on it, and there's only two John songs. So there's only Come Together and Lucy in the Sky. And I thought that was kind of, it got me thinking really, like I wonder why that is, like that John songs maybe don't translate to instrumental versions.
Maybe the melodies are more sort of vocalized, so they don't translate as well into sort of instrumental lines.
That's definitely, you know, that's where I was kind of going with it, because there's a brilliant Bill Frisell album. Bill Frisell is one of my favorite guitarists, and he's done a whole album of John Lennon covers, which is called All We Are Saying in 2011. And, you know, he does songs like Julia, which have got classic kind of Lennon. Julia's almost a one note melody, you know, and he does a brilliant version of that. And it's because Bill Frisell has got this incredible phrasing, which is almost like vocal phrasing. And he kind of really makes the songs kind of sing and almost emulate the kind of vocalisms of John. And it's a shame, actually, the streaming version doesn't have his version of Strawberry Fields on it. It's a bonus track on the CD. But if you can get hold of that, I'm sure it's on YouTube. The Bill Frisell version of Strawberry Fields is something else.
Wow.
It's absolutely brilliant.
I'll check that out.
And one more thing, while we're on jazzy kind of versions of John songs, I also found a really good Brad Meldow cover of I Am the Walrus live.
Oh, great.
Which is fantastic. And again, he's doing those kind of John-like vocalisms, I suppose. Because I Am the Walrus has got kind of a lot of kind of almost grace notes or very kind of blue notes.
Mm.
But the way he's emulating that on the piano is just amazing. So check that out on YouTube.
We should resurrect our old playlist, actually. So we might put some links to that in the description. Yeah, I went to Ronnie Scott's the other day for my dad's belated 80th birthday.
Oh, nice.
And they played...
Happy birthday. And happy birthday, John, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, John. And Sean, same day, aren't they?
Yeah. And my friend Sam.
And Robin's friend Sam. but yeah, they played three Beatles songs, I think, at Ronnie Scott's, Ronnie Scott's Jazz Orchestra. All of them, Paul. The theory stands up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because the Paul ones are so... The melodies are so clearly kind of linear, I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, one was Yesterday, so, you know.
Yeah.
That's quite good, that one.
Yeah.
Quite a good melody.
It is.
But great stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you so much for everyone who got in touch. We'll be back at the end of the show to tell you a little about what is happening next week. But until then, here is our brilliant conversation with the fantastic Anya Magliano. Welcome to another Your Own Personal Beatles. This week, we're very happy to have a comedian who's just stormed it at Edinburgh. Anya Magliano, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm loving that you use the word stormed it for Edinburgh.
You did storm it. I think that's fair.
I did make it look like I stormed it on social media. No, I had a really nice time. But it does feel like a very surreal sort of bubble of like, it's good to know that you are talking about it, because it almost feels like no one outside of it actually knew that it existed. And maybe that's true, but in the sense that no one cares as much.
Well, it was amazing. And we'll plug your the rest of your upcoming dates.
Fantastic.
At the end of it, but I saw it in preview actually.
Did you? Yeah, I can't remember which one you came to.
Because you'd already agreed to do the podcast. So I was very happy about that because I'd heard the show's really good. And I wasn't going to Edinburgh, so I thought I'd sneak into the back and just watch it, you know, from the shadows. Mm. But a friend of mine had saved one seat for me, and it was the front and centre. And I didn't know you if you knew who I was or what it looked like.
Which show was it at?
It was at the Museum of Comedy.
Yeah, I think I do remember that. But I have this real anxiety of, like, if I think I recognise people in the audience, I kind of go into the spiral in my head about it not actually being them, and vice versa. Like, I'll see people that I don't know and be like, is that someone that I know? And all of this is going on whilst I'm on autopilot, like, babbling about my jokes.
Well, you didn't let on, and it was fantastic. I mean, I have that in all social situations.
Yeah.
Does that bother you if you know someone in the audience? Are you just thinking, how's Dave going to react to this?
Yeah, I've kind of got, like, one eye on them at all times.
Yeah.
And it can be quite unnerving, especially I did the show with my parents in the audience for the first time towards the end of The Fringe, which is, like, definitely the better way to have it around, like, have it once I'm really comfortable with it.
Because your parents feature.
Yeah, they do. And I did warn them that. Yeah. They feature, but also quite inappropriate stories about my life also feature.
Yeah.
So there was, like, oh, this bit's about you. That's going to be awkward. And it's like, oh, this bit's about some X-rated content. This might also be awkward. But I don't mind it. If it's people that I'm aware of from comedy as well, who, like, comedians who I like in the audience, that always freaks me out a little bit because I'm like, you probably think I'm pathetic. Anyway, I have a lovely time performing.
Yeah.
That's great. No, it's brilliant.
But it is an absolutely brilliant show. One thing that struck me, obviously, was not the first person on this podcast, but you do have a cat named after Paul McCartney.
Yes. Really? Who's the other person?
Laura Barton. Oh. Do you know the music journalist who writes in The Guardian? She had a fat cat called Paul McCartney as well.
Her cat's first name was Paul.
Oh, yours is middle name.
Mine's his middle name.
Oh, just like the real Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, he's called James Paul McCartney.
Already coming off as a plastic fan. Otis is my cat's first name. I had a real, like, vision of Otis being his first name from when I picked him up from this woman in Leytonstone. Who did not look like she should be giving out cats. But then later on, actually, in around Christmas, when I watched the Get Back documentary, which I had this, like, mad week where I thought I had COVID, but I was testing negative. But it was kind of in that period of Christmas. It would have been 2021 where the kind of rules were pretty flexible, but everyone still kind of had their own moral compasses.
Oh, yeah.
Longer those days gone.
Yeah.
But I was like, I really wanted to go home for Christmas. I was like, I'll stay in my house, just have a couple of cans on my own. And I watched all of Get Back and spent, like, I don't know if either of you had any periods where you were, like, kind of in a lockdown of your own, like, creation on your own. But I just went absolutely mad. I ordered a replica Paul McCartney sweater vest for about £140.
Oh, Christ.
Worth every penny?
Yeah, it is worth every penny, but it's custom made. Wow. So it took, like, 8 weeks to arrive, like, in the hottest week of the year, and I just have had, like, no... I wore it to one gig and was, like, sweating profusely out of the corners of it.
So this is the one he's wearing?
Magical Mystery Tour. Yeah.
Oh, that one. Oh, yeah, lovely.
It's a great... It's a really... I think in winter, I'm going to be so glad about that.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm like, what a waste of money. But I was alone for so long.
So were you watching Get Back in a kind of COVID-induced woozy state?
Yeah, but I didn't have COVID. I think I just had the standard flu, which obviously doesn't count for anything these days.
These days.
But because it was just me and my cat.
Mm.
And I was like, I really connected with Paul McCartney watching Get Back. I was just like, I really like him so much. So much so that I'm going to give my cat the honour of a middle name 2 years into his life. He's getting the middle name Paul.
That's great.
Which I think Otis Paul, it sounds almost quite like Catholic.
Yeah. Like one of the popes.
Yeah, it sounds like a pope. But I think it's a good name.
It is.
But yeah, I do mention that in the show. I tried to talk about the Beatles for longer but it just didn't quite fit in with the show at that point. I think it might be something for a later period.
Oh, really? So you think there's stand-up material about the Beatles?
I don't know. I think there's kind of like a bit of a gist of my show and my whole personality, which is that, like, I don't feel quite, like, age-appropriate a lot of the time. Like, I feel like a stepdad in the body of a 24-year-old girl. So I think the Beatles stuff I was trying to write was kind of in that vein.
Right.
I think it can be quite a useful thing for me sometimes if, like, I'm in a situation with someone who I might not necessarily have anything in common with and I don't really know how to talk to them. Sometimes if you find that common thread, which is the same of any hobby, you can be like, oh, thank God we don't have to talk about your opinion on, like, trans people for a couple of minutes. So, yeah, that was useful for me.
Did you, from a comedian's perspective, is that part of your appreciation of the Beatles, then, the comedy?
Yeah, thing? That was something that completely blows. It blows and it continues to blow my mind is how funny they are. Mm. Which I didn't realise until I was on the train back from somewhere. I can't remember what it was like. I get so many long train journeys on my own because of the way I gig around the country and the fact that I will probably never be able to drive because of my terrible coordination skills.
Well, I can't drive. Can you drive?
I can drive, but I have not driven. Before COVID, I hadn't driven for 11 years.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That makes me feel
then,
a lot better.
Then I had to just to be able to go to the supermarket. It was such a thrilling prospect that I got insured in my mum's car like I was 16 again.
I don't think there's any reason for me to want to drive other than the idea of, like, playing music in the car and, like, having someone come in your car and you're like, you're going to listen to my music now.
Yeah.
Welcome.
I miss that. I miss having a nice solo sing song, actually.
Yeah.
Singing, belting out some music on the motorway.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet that's nice. The way I got into the Beatles, which I think is probably the same of a lot of your guests, is through my dad playing them to me, but it was specifically always in the car.
Okay, that
was like, because my parents were divorced, so like whenever I was seeing my dad, we were always in the car. He was picking me up, he was driving me to Frankie and Benny's. It was that sort of situation. And so there'd be a lot of music, and I don't know if this is like a experience of any other children of divorce or just children of two parents, I guess, is like the conflicting music taste of my mum's car and my dad's car. My dad's car was like the Beatles and also like 80s sort of erasure, that sort of vibe. And then my mum was quite like Primal Scream, Rolling Stones. And maybe that's why they're divorced. But I always liked my dad's car more for music.
Were there any particular records you remember from your very early memories? Or was it a sort of red album, blue album?
It was the red album he had. It was the red one. And I remember he would always, when I was younger, whenever he'd play me songs, he'd always like point out stuff in them. And like, I remember he played me is it the Frog Chorus? The Paul McCartney one. He played it to me being like, without telling me what it was called, and was like, can you guess what animal this is about?
That's good.
It's like a sort of weird, like, inspiring, like, way of teaching it almost, even though it wasn't. And
did you guess?
No.
Oh, right.
I was completely baffled. I think I was just like, can we just have dinner? Like, yeah. I don't want to engage in this weird thing.
That's good.
I remember when he played me Yellow Submarine for the first time, I was like, I didn't know you were allowed to do this with the music. This is nonsense. I love it.
That's great. Do you think, because a lot of the people we tend to interview tend to be kind of our age and who sort of maybe got into the Beatles with Anthology in the 90s, and but also through the parents and stuff. I wondered, like, because you're slightly, much younger than me. Yeah, you're younger than me.
Slightly younger than me.
Yeah. like, I wonder, how do you feel like your generation thinks of the Beatles in terms of where they fit in culturally?
Well, I kind of had no perspective on this until, actually, that's what I was going to, I lost my own train of thought, which I'm really sorry will probably happen a lot of times.
That's what we do.
That's what podcasting is. Yeah. You know? It's just not knowing what your train of thought is. When the thing that I noticed about them being funny was because I found this video on YouTube that was like a compilation of their interview clips, which is like obviously a great thing to exist, but it's really funny because the way it was titled and like captioned was in the language that like people use on TikTok, and it was called like something like 10 minutes the Beatles being chaotic for 10 minutes straight.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, this is so weird. Yeah. Like, what a strange kind of mixing of like language and...
kind of memification of...
Yeah. And I guess to some extent I understand it, because you're like, if a pop star was this funny in this day and age, people would probably be like posting clips of it and it would be going viral. But I watched those... that interview compilation and was really struck by how funny they were, because my only other reference points before that for them had been their music and just kind of general cultural, the vibes in the air. So seeing that, I was like, what? No one told me this. I then also, just out of my own interest, sort of started looking at TikTok and like the Beatles vibes on there, and like I'm not the most into TikTok, but I like understand how to use it, and I try and post on it from time to time to appear more as a part of my generation than I feel I am. But there are sort of people who are like have their own like Beatles TikTok fan pages. There's lots of Beatles fan Instagram pages where they post like old pictures, which I follow quite a lot of, because it's quite a nice thing to have like pop up on your feed and you don't have to seek it out. It's one of the rare things on social media where you're like, oh, this has made my day better.
And it's also amazing how many new photographs seem to appear. Photos you haven't seen before. They're just this endless supply.
Yeah,
yeah, so many. Yeah. It's going to be so hard for any people who get famous from now, who are going to have like biographers having to sift through their like camera roll of 400 pictures a day trying to find something worthwhile.
Yeah.
I think I also saw this TikTok, which me and my friend spoke about. He told me about it, and then it came up on my feed because everyone is listening. And it was like this drummer who was like on TikTok as a drummer, sort of just drumming different songs. And then he did like this demonstration to show like what a kind of normal drummer would drum in the songs. And then he'd show how Ringo did it differently, which I thought was really interesting. Like the kind of, I'm not instrumental. I'm not musical at all, or instrumental. So I have no idea whether it was a kind of accurate.
There's a couple of ones. There's a good one where a few drummers have shown how the Ticket to Ride is so good because Ringo's left-handed and he's leading with the left and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's another good one I've seen, which is a drummer just showing how Ringo always adds a bit of swing to a straight beat.
Yeah, I mean he's completely like idiosyncratic. No one, you can't really teach how Ringo drums. Is like just his personality, and that's kind of why he's so good.
But those, I think those kind of technical videos that pop up, like I get quite a lot of them, they're always so interesting, you know. I think
The Beatles should sort of lean into more of that stuff on there,
because
their sort of estate is relatively stuffy, and sometimes like some of the sort of TikTok-y stuff they did around Get Back was quite sort of cringy.
Yeah.
But in terms of the fan content, I think it's really fascinating to see, is it just me and the algorithms, or are more people interested in theory? Because it seems like
we probably have quite a similar YouTube algorithm.
But some of the promoted video, or the like suggested videos, are just so interesting about like, why did the Beatles use this chord change? What's happening in this chord change?
I just think it's like, as someone who is quite embarrassed, I don't know why, but like I wish I was musical in some capacity, but I just can't, like what you were saying about the different strokes and that sort of thing, like I have no idea what that means. So it's quite nice having someone show you in like a really quick video, like something really basically musical, so you can see that and be like, oh, I understand something about this now. Because it can be a bit intimidating, I think, like hearing people. I think I have had that with other forms of music, and just like, you know, when anyone talks about anything with like a lot of knowledge and you don't have that, you're like, well, probably not for me then.
I guess like the more they sort of transcend into kind of myth, and the further they get away from, the more time goes by, the harder it is to sort of quantify what's so incredible about them. Because yeah. I find at work, like, I work with people who are sort of in their early 20s and they're all, like, absolutely passionate music fans. But they just don't really get the significance of the Beatles. They kind of, for them, they're the same as Oasis.
Right.
They're like both things that were really massive in the past.
In the past.
And they don't really, I mean, one of them is like, yeah, if I had to choose between Beatles and Oasis, I'm Oasis every time. It's like, oh, that's not a comparison.
Yeah, no one's making you make that choice. Yeah, yeah.
One wouldn't exist without the other, but that's, you know, fair enough. But,
that's an interesting point. Yeah, I suppose, I think I'm guilty of maybe talking too technically about music. But do you think that's what your dad was doing when he was pointing out bits in
maybe.
The songs? Was he saying, oh, you've got to listen to this?
I think, and I don't think it's a bad thing. Like, I think people should definitely talk technically about music. I think it's more my personality that is like, oh, God, I don't want to, like, be caught out on something that I don't know.
Right.
And,
right.
like, because I've been in situations where I've got myself into, like, lies by pretending to go along with it to try
yeah.
and impress
welcome, to, welcome to doing a Beatles podcast.
Yeah. 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 I think my dad, what, I don't really know what he was doing.
Right.
I feel like sometimes he raised me like as a sort of experiment. He told me that his favorite animals were spiders so that I wouldn't be scared of them.
Okay.
Which yeah. isn't true. Like he doesn't, they're not his favorite animal. He doesn't have one. And this is just that sort of vibe where I'm like, what? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Sort of this. What's the bigger picture here? And I am terrified of spiders.
Yeah. Still, oh, well, that so didn't work then.
Didn't work. No. But I do like the Beatles. Yeah. You win some, you lose some.
Did you ever grapple with any instruments when you were young?
Yeah, I had. I don't know whether it was my mum. My mum isn't particularly musical. I think her dad was. I think she maybe used to play the guitar when she was younger, but it's not like. I feel like you meet some families where, I don't know if yours is like this, where it's like everyone's musical. No, not really.
For me, I'm a complete black sheep.
Oh, really?
Everyone in my family is completely tone deaf.
Wow.
I was sort of all right.
Yeah, my mum was a good singer, and dad was always a huge music fan, but never played an instrument.
Played anything.
But me and my brother... Yeah, sort of learnt guitar together, really.
I feel like sometimes you get those families where it's like really extreme and it's like everyone is, it's like the Von Trapp family. It's like 14 children all playing 100 instruments.
Yeah.
I also have this exact personality that if they had done that to me, I never would have picked up.
Right,
it
actually needed, you needed to be the black sheep for that to work.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah, because I think I played the violin for like one horrible year, sort of screeched along and hated it. And then was like, I want to do guitar. Guitar's cool. Mm. But the lessons were only classical guitar, which is obviously...
That's not cool.
Yeah, it's a straight U-turn into being the least cool of all the instruments. Yeah.
I think the worst thing about learning classical guitar at school is you have to get that little... stool for your foot.
Yeah. You
know, that is not cool, bringing that out.
No, that's really not gig. Cool. That's what like people who are obsessed with the gut use on the, like a little
poo
stool type thing. Yeah.
That is a game changer though. One girl at my school told me about it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
One girl at my school told me about it and I was like, you've revolutionised. You've like done more for feminism than anyone else. That was just by telling me this. This is like incredible information.
Yeah.
I've gotten into this real... I'm not really sure what that meant.
Yeah.
I think I was just so like in awe of a girl. It was in sixth form.
Yeah.
Who was going around telling everyone how to poo.
Poo, yeah.
I was like, you're fantastic.
Yeah. I didn't realise there was a right and a wrong way until I was in my mid-20s.
I think now she works with refugees.
Well,
so telling them her tips as well.
Yeah, saving the world again.
But now I really want to learn how to play the drums. That's like this new idea I've got. And I've had it for like a year now. So I think it's not like completely.
Not a fad.
Yeah, it's not a fad.
Cool.
I think isn't like if you want a tattoo, you should wait like 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's like if you want to learn the drums, I think. Or if you don't spend any money in London, you should wait.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I was listening. I was thinking maybe that could be good for me because I really like stuff where I have to hit it hard. Like I do boxing as well.
Oh, wow.
So it feels like boxing and drumming.
Yeah.
Kind of the same.
Yeah. Lots of
thing.
Hitting.
Yeah.
Mm.
So you mentioned to us earlier, and I'm excited to hear about this, that you were in a Beatles-themed play in your youth. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I'm pretty sure I was. Like, it's such a clear memory for me, but there's such a shocking, like, lack of, like, corroborating evidence for it that... It could have been one of my dad's like weird experiments or something. But I was part of this group called Theatre Train, which was, I think, it sounds like a direct rip-off of Stagecoach. Because it's like Stage Theatre, Coach Train. Mm. Because the Stagecoach in our area was like, I can't remember why, but it was like inaccessible to us for some reason. So my mum let me join this thing called Theatre Train. And it was like a drama club, sort of musical theatre club. I can't sing and I can't really dance. But I think when you're a child, like you kind of can dance just because you're like small. So it just kind of, just kind of works.
You can't tell them they're not allowed to go to Theatre Train.
Yeah, exactly. So I would do this kind of musical theatre club every week on a Saturday. And then the club would... every year, I think, would do a kind of mass production where it got like every theatre train from around the country would link together to put on this massive performance. And it would always be centred around a kind of musical act and have like some sort of theme. But because of the sheer quantity of pupils that were doing it, it was just like absolute chaos. Like there were so many children, it wasn't like a coherent production. It was almost like a choir but with like scenes being acted out at the front of the stage.
Right.
So like when I was there, there were two. There was one which was like all of the different James Bond songs, all the like Bond themes,
right?
And like a sort of vague attempt at a Bond play, and that was at, I believe, the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. Somehow they got access to, like, big theatres for this.
Yeah.
And then
what
the one...
age are the cast of this?
I think the cast are from about, like, 6 till, like, 16. Or, like, maybe 6 till 12 or something like that.
And they did every Bond theme.
I think so. and then... and then also some others. That song, Clowns to the Left of Me, Jokers to the Right, that's not a Bond theme. No, that was in it. That was in it.
Right.
Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs.
Quite famous theme.
All the Bond films in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, I have no idea what was going on. But the one that is relevant is they had a Beatles-themed one, which was at the Royal Albert Hall.
What?
Oh my goodness.
Which is insane, right? Yeah. And I have this really clear memory of it. And I texted both my parents about it, and they were like, we have no recollection of this.
Really?
And I was like, I'm going mad because that was one of the reasons that I know all the Beatles songs so well and always have my whole life, is because I was like, I had to learn them to perform them. And I was always really jealous because we were like the High Wycombe Theatre Train, so we weren't like one of the top ones. And all the kids who got chosen to be in the kind of scenes out the front were always like a bit older, and they got to be the starring role. And the one thing that I remember so clearly is like, they seem to have like really confused narratives about people dying. Like, I think they showed John Lennon's mum dying, but to the song Eleanor Rigby or something.
Right.
So it was like really kind of muddled. And I think it really confused my understanding of what actually happened to the Beatles. Because then also he got shot on stage in slow motion, but I'm pretty sure a girl played the bullet, so it was like very conceptual.
Wow.
But bearing in mind this is like a 12-year-old boy and like a 6-year-old girl,
and this was at the Royal Albert Hall.
What a offense. And the only reason I have to know that this exists is because there's like one clip of it on YouTube.
Right.
It's really hard to distinguish what's going on, but it is proof that it happened.
Wow.
And you can see like a woman and a girl dressed in like white. I think you can see the moment leading up to where we act out John Lennon being shot. It's so bad.
Wow. Do you remember what your part was? What your role was?
I never got to be even on the stage in any of it. I was like just one of the singers of the choir. And that's what led me into pursuing a career where I would get to be front and center.
Yeah.
For the rest of my life.
One day I'm going to be the bullet.
Yeah, exactly. God. I remember just my parents also, they would come to these shows and have to sit through like 2.5 hours of children singing completely out of time.
Oh my
like
goodness,
really, really terrible stuff. and they'd come out and just like, bless them, have to pretend to be like proud of me. And I just have, I've been in so many like bad amateur dramatic student productions my whole life, and you can always see in anyone's eyes afterwards like the sacrifice they've made by being there.
Yeah.
And that's a real one, because they can't even, it's not like a nursery production where you're like, oh, it's bad, but I can see my child really clearly. I was like one tiny blob in the back of the Royal Albert Hall, like singing along to Obla Di Obla Da.
That's amazing.
I really, this isn't really anything to do with anything, but I went to see my nephew's production of Matilda at his school, and he's 10. And it was really, really good.
Mm.
And what was so sweet at the end, because it was the last night, or the last performance of the play, like, there were about, some of the cast were in, like, floods of tears because they were so sad it had ended.
Oh, I remember that feeling.
Yeah. It was, like,
I mean,
crying their eyes out.
On stage?
Yeah, well, during the curtain call and stuff.
Oh, God, that's really heartbreaking.
It was really sad. It was really sad. You know, it was lovely. It was a lovely moment. And do you, what other... So you did Obla Di Obla Da, you did Eleanor Rigby.
I'm pretty sure it was, like, all the big ones.
Yeah.
I think Yesterday. Okay. Yesterday was definitely in there.
Yeah.
I remember I didn't like that. Sergeant Pepper, that was where I really love Sergeant Pepper. Yeah. And that was whenever we got to do Penny Lane in the show. Mm. I loved it so much. Right. I was like, this is a banger.
Well, this definitely happened then.
And I'll show you the clip. I'll find the clip and I'll show it to you because it's really odd.
Yeah.
We've now seen some video evidence of that extraordinary show. It definitely happened.
Yeah.
But it was pretty amazing. We were both pretty blown away by the...
The scale.
The scale, yeah. It was like an Olympic opening ceremony.
Of children. Well, do you know, thinking about it now, I'm like, I kind of saw it as like something that was a rip-off, but like maybe my mum spent like all her salary on me going to this amazing theatre school that I just have no understanding of how good it was.
It's definitely better than my production of Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Mm.
The Reading Chronicle said I was passable Joseph. Never forget that.
What? You got a reviewer.
Reading Chronicle might be stretching it. Maybe some other local rag.
Mm. What were you doing in the play?
Just sort of singing.
Oh, right, just singing. Background choir.
I think I was just background choir. Yeah. I never made it. Made it to the front.
Because there are some good voices in there.
Yeah, and I don't have one of those.
Yeah. Camera not on the parents, which is probably always a good thing.
Yeah, it's completely empty. The audience is completely empty.
Yeah.
It's got 9.4K views, which I imagine must be all the other children who are now grown up being like, did that happen?
There's probably more children in it than who weren't.
In the world.
Yeah. Pretty amazing to play the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
I wish I remembered it more clearly. But that was definitely, that and my dad were like the kind of two key introductions to the Beatles for me, I think. And then like rediscovering them when Get Back came out.
Yeah.
I was like, this is good stuff.
How did you feel about Get Back after watching it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. But also, I think because my fandom of like the Beatles started like a bit later in kind of earnest before I just like their music, I don't think I got a sense of like how monumental it was to have that until like now, where I kind of know a bit more about like how significant it is to have that much footage of that, like those specific kind of days and stuff. Whereas I think when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is cool. And then as you're kind of watching it, you're like, oh, this seems quite unique in what it is and what it's doing. Mm. And I really enjoyed it. And I think it was quite a good thing to watch when I was stuck inside, like not actually having COVID, but something quite gentle and like not asking too much of you, which is what I really liked. I just was able to kind of tune into it. And I watched it in loads of small chunks.
Okay.
And then I watched the first one in quite a few small chunks because my flatmate wanted to watch it with me. And then when he left the house because I thought I was ill, then I watched the others in my own time.
Mm.
And I really, I loved it. And then I also got back into watching like some of the Beatles music videos after mm-hmm. that. I just went on like a, I would just like let them autoplay on YouTube and just lie on the sofa like semi-comatose watching them.
Yeah. There is that great sense where you're watching it and it's like you kind of sink into the rhythm of what they're doing, you know.
Yeah.
Because in some ways it is kind of like a slow TV because sometimes there's nothing much happening.
Yeah.
But it, you know, you just kind of, yeah.
Yeah, the length is so important, though, because I think a lot of people were daunted by, like, when we heard it was going to be however many, 8 hours or whatever it is.
Mm.
But actually, you need, you need that time to sort of relax into it a little bit, I suppose.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have watched it if I had been out as much as I usually was. It was because I gave that time I was able. I wouldn't have watched it as attentively.
Mm.
I really got jealous watching like a creative process where they're not distracted by like Instagram. It really made me not nostalgic because I've never kind of had that experience, but just jealous of a time where you're like, oh god, I think if I didn't have Instagram or Twitter, which to be fair is in my control, but like, I think if I didn't have it, it's like, well, maybe I could write the Get Back of comedy.
But they are very distracted by contemporary things. They watch TV.
Yeah,
they're
always talking
about TV and the news, and they're bringing records in and
having toast.
Yeah, having toast. But they're probably as switched on and connected culturally more so than anyone else in the country, really, because they're like, you know, they're getting.
They're quite 9-to-5-y though as well. I mean, they turn up late, but there's a lot of like, you know, it wasn't uncommon for them to be still plugging away at like 3 in the morning, you know, putting a graft, which I think nowadays you probably wouldn't do, would you?
Mm.
Was there something about Paul particularly that you liked? How come your cat didn't end up being called George?
I liked George's outfits the most. I think his like big coats and stuff, I was like, he looks like a bird of prey. Like, he looks amazing, just sort of like coming to the studio. I thought this was a theory that I came up with on my own, and then I realised it was from one of your episodes of your podcast that I'd heard. But the one about, and I think it was from one of your guests, I can't remember who, but about the different periods of your life going through Beatles. Mine was just like always Paul. I think I've always liked Paul the most.
Mm.
I think it's like a soulmate connection.
Yeah.
I think I just get the sense, I'm convinced that I will really get on with him when we eventually meet. And I think he doesn't come across badly at any point to me when watching Get Back, which I think is a really impressive feat given how long of them you'd see. You think there must be a point in this where you'd start to get a bit annoying. I think I just fancy him a little bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, my God, he's pretty lovely in that.
Yeah.
But I think he's compelling almost as like a tragic hero in it as well, because he's sort of watching his empire disintegrate or something, you know. And there's that, he's the kind of most watchable one plot wise, if that's the right word.
Yeah, I think that's true.
You know,
yeah, he knows it's all crumbling and he's kind of powerless to do anything about it at that stage.
And he doesn't really have like stuff, as far as I remember, like he's not really distracted by other people in the room in quite the same way, with the kind of like presence of Yoko, and then also like the Hare Krishna monks and like, you know, all these other figures in the room, even though his kid and Linda come and visit him, like it feels very like compartmentalized, whereas the others kind of have like their lives like bleeding into it. You kind of get a sense, like maybe that's the tragic hero vibe, is like he's a bit of a like kind of solitary figure.
Well, he often reverts to just playing the piano, doesn't he? Particularly in Twickenham, he's kind of, that seems to be his
that's his safe place, isn't it?
It's really interesting watching Anthology again after Get Back and the way they deal with kind of Let It Be. Because, you know, with the Get Back, the whole narrative kind of thing is like, oh, it wasn't as bad as you always thought it was. They were getting on. You can see them getting on and everything. But in Anthology, they're kind of going like, yeah, it was really hard. We weren't getting on.
Yeah.
And like George Martin says, it's a very unhappy record, Let It Be.
Yeah, they skirt over it pretty quickly, don't they?
But I guess
it's like, it wasn't all bad, is the...
Yeah, but I wonder how much of that is like retrospective because of what came afterwards, whereas at the time you can see that they are having fun, you know, but I wonder, you know, in the 90s they were sort of looking at it through the perspective of what happened after, you know.
And do you want the sort of clean ending of like, oh, but then they did Abbey Road and it was all happy?
Yeah.
Whereas actually Abbey Road was just a continuation of all of the misery and the same old riffs, and then that actually did make them never want to be in the same room as each other ever again. Mm. So yeah.
Also, I guess, like, you can be in something and be like, oh, I'm kind of having fun, but the overall feeling of it can still...
Yeah.
This is my lesson of the Fringe.
Fringe, yeah.
You can still be like, oh, is this actually good? Like,
yeah.
Even if you're having fun in the moment.
That's fascinating, yeah.
But I guess also the thing, when they do seem like they're having fun, that almost reminded me of, like, when they're making each other laugh, you're like, oh, you're like almost like a group of, and this is the most offensive thing you can say, a group of sketch comedians. But, like, in a sense where you're like, oh, you got to this place for a reason. Like, you do work well together and you do have that kind of, like, intrinsic understanding of each other.
Yeah.
But I guess you can also see, like, if they're so used to that, that maybe there comes a point where you don't, that's not exciting anymore.
Mm.
I guess it's, I don't have any brothers or sisters that I grew up with. I have, like, stepbrothers, but it does seem very, like, familial sort of vibes.
Yeah, I think that's it. And big, strong personalities and... Pythons are obviously a famous dynamic that was pretty similar, where there's too many leaders. I guess you need to be like sheeps, three Ringos.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You mentioned you're a fan of Hard Day's Night as well.
Yeah.
Because I rewatched that recently, and one thing I really noticed is, well, how funny all of them are, but John is really naturally funny.
Mm-hmm.
George has just got such brilliant delivery. Ringo's naturally funny, but Paul is kind of a ham. He's sort of always like trying too hard. Like, he sort of wants to be the funniest. But
that's like, so true.
But, you know, I think John is just... John is so watchable whenever he's on screen, I think. He's so funny in everything. I was watching just, Your Mother Should Know in Magical Mystery Tour. If you just watch John, you will be in tears of laughter because his face is just like kind of this just stupid kind of sort of, I know this is ridiculous kind of thing. I'm slightly taking the piss, but I'm doing it as well. Kind of, he's just so funny.
I would love to see the script of Hard Day's Night.
Oh, yeah.
That would be so interesting.
Because it does feel so like, oh, it can't be off the cuff. But then you watch the interviews and they are a bit like that. Oh, I'm not. Obviously, the thing isn't improvised.
Yeah.
But it's so fast and so dense. And
yeah.
I watched, about half an hour of it. I've always loved the first half an hour more than the rest of the film. Mm. But I don't know whether that's like, you know, when you grow up with a film and you usually watch the first half an hour loads more than you watch the rest of it.
Yes, yeah, I definitely did that, but rewatching it just flies by. It's
dense. It's like Airplane.
Yeah.
Like just gag every 2 seconds.
So did you kind of watch this kind of in getting sort of post Get Back then when watching Hard Day's Night?
I think it was but it was still fairly recent in terms of, like, it was maybe a couple of months before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a train as well, and I'd, like, downloaded it for the train journey, and I didn't look into it at all. Like, I just was getting back... I was getting back into the Beatles. Like, I was brushing up on them for something else, and then was like, oh, watch that, I've never seen that. But I didn't even know whether it was, like, a documentary or, like, a narrative film or, like, a... I don't know what the other options are, a play. So then when I watched like the first 10 minutes, I was so confused because I was like, this is a great film, yeah. And it's really funny. And like, because I already had an understanding of them as being funny in interviews, but maybe in a slightly like cynical way, I wasn't expecting it to translate so easily into like some bigger vision of like a film. Like, how would you make that work as a film? But it's like such a unique thing where it feels like really authorial, I guess. It feels like something they've created.
Even though
you're like, nowadays, I'd say this is someone who doesn't actually know what they're talking about. But like, if you had like a big band make a film, there's no way something like that would end up happening, right?
No, because you would need more concept.
Yeah.
You would be like, what, we can't just film you on a train talking to strangers.
But the dialogue is so funny, and it's and I think the rhythms of the comedy feel really contemporary. It really, you know, the manager says to John, like, "Oh, did you get on the train all right?" And John says, "No," like while they're on the train.
Yeah.
It's like so good, and there's a lot of that weird undercutting and sort of weird playful language.
Yeah,
where the manager's talking to the other guy about, "Oh, where's he gone? Oh, where's he gone? He's just gone down the he's just down the air." That bit is brilliant.
And when they're talking about his granddad being clean,
that's it.
That's when I was watching it the first time. I was like, this sounds like the sort of thing that like a group of like sketch comedians would have in the sketch just because it makes them laugh.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it feels like a kind of joke where you're like, a sort of gagsmith would be this maybe isn't the strongest joke, but you're like, you can just tell that it works.
Yeah.
Hey, pardon me for asking, but who's that little old man?
What little old man?
That little old man.
Oh, that one, that's my grandfather.
Your grandfather?
Yeah.
That's not your grandfather.
It is, you know.
But I've seen your grandfather, he lives in your house.
Oh, that's my other grandfather, but he's my grandfather as well.
How do you reckon that one out?
Well, everyone's entitled to two, aren't they? And it's my other one.
We know that, but what's he doing here?
Well, my mother thought the trip would do him good.
How's that?
He's nursing a broken heart.
Ah, poor old thing. Hey, mister. Are you nursing a broken heart? He's a nice old man, isn't he?
He's very clean.
I mean, that is a reference to him being Steptoe and a dirty old man, isn't it? That is, why they do that, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, he does look clean.
Yeah, he does look very clean.
Oh, my God. There must be so many bits that have gone over my head.
But then there must be, again, like, there must be so much stuff like that.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I guess if there is a kind of theme of especially that opening act.
Yeah.
It's them juxtaposed against the sort of old, stuffy, pre-generation or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a shame that it's in black and white and the sound is a little bit ropey because it does feel more antiquated. But yeah, it's them against the iconography of like early 1960s Britain.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, they are just jumping off the screen and, you know, not like, I fought the war for you.
Yeah.
I just saw who you won.
But there's so many bits about those, because there's obviously like Ringo walking past all the ruined buildings. There's shots of ruined buildings and things. And there's a great bit when they're in the studio, and there's the soldier pouring ketchup on his fake wound. Do you remember that?
Mm. Oh,
it's just
a
lovely little visual gag. So I think there are lots of references to the war. And I think the great thing is it is about that lack of deference in that scene.
Yeah.
But the other great joke is the fact that they're kind of seen as being yobs, but Ringo is given this ridiculously verbose dialogue. You know?
The
psychological pattern plays havoc with my drum skins.
Yeah.
Oh,
stuff
yeah.
Stuff like that. You know? But that's like that's a joke about kind of sort of saying don't underestimate these people. They're a lot smarter than you think, you know, I think.
Leave them drums alone.
Oh, surely I could just have a little touch.
You so much as breathe heavy on them and I'm out on strike.
Aren't you being rather arbitrary?
There you go, hiding behind a smokescreen of bourgeois cliches. I don't go messing about your earphones, do I?
Spoil sport.
Well?
He's very fussy about his drums, you know. They loom large in his legend.
It feels like it must have had like a very unified like creative process behind it, which I guess is when you see Get Back and the kind of like moments of like disjunction between them and all the like plans and stuff.
Yeah.
You're like, this feels like a slightly different creative vibe. You can feel it not quite working. Whereas watching Hard Day's Night, you're like, this must have worked. Like, this must have been really fun to do. And everyone sounds like they were on the same page, because otherwise it wouldn't work as well as it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they all had a complete whale of a time making it. And they always wanted to recapture the spirit of that film, and they never really succeeded because then when you get famous and you get a budget, people, they're like, well, why don't we do it in a Jamaica or Barbados or whatever. It's like, it's never going to work out that way.
So you're reading the Craig Brown book at the moment.
Yes.
So you said when you came in, it's good for someone with a short attention span.
Yeah. It's written very engagingly, I think. Like, also just like on the page. Like, he uses silly fonts, which I'm like, I haven't seen a font like this in a book for years.
Yeah.
And I think I read a book called Oversexed, Underpaid, and Over There.
David Hepworth.
And that was like a kind of good, like, felt very like chronological, like quite thorough, quite like clear. And then to read something else that's like feels a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
And kind of is a bit cinematic in the way it's written in some of the moments, and feels a bit more like it's kind of leaning into. I really enjoy reading like musical biographies, but that's a new discovery of mine. So I haven't actually read that many, even though I think I really like them. But I haven't read anything that's been written like that before.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has its detractors, you know, particularly for his treatment of Yoko and everything. But
which I haven't got to yet. Yeah.
This is 1, 2, 3, 4, by the way, by Craig Brown, for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. But what I do like about it is, the way it is kind of all over the place, and it does have that lack of deference, I think, which kind of suits the subject. But, you know, that bit about turning up at, you know, Paul McCartney's house and not being able to take notes, the National Trust.
Yeah.
Some people really don't like that scene, but I found that quite funny.
Yeah, you know.
I think it's funny. And I really like the bit about, you know, when he goes into this forensic detail about John Lennon and Brian Epstein's holiday in Spain.
He
goes through all the different accounts of what could have happened. I think that's all quite good and quite funny. You know,
I speak as well, like, cannot stress that enough. I haven't got to the Yoko Ono a bit, so I could turn 360 on my point of view of him. But it does feel like a very interesting way to go about, like, it must be hard as a writer to have so many different conflicting, like, source things to work from. And it feels like a good way of being like, I'm going to make this all work and not try and prove a specific point, but use it to show something new about like how many different people think they have their own kind of
Way. Yeah, exactly. You've got to lean into that when you're doing something that's so sort of well-mined.
And it's funny as well. And they really come to life on the page. Like, do you know that bit with George's, like, when they're in Hamburg and he's sick on the floor?
They call
the pile of vomit the thing.
It's so horrible. And it's there for like 7 days.
It's just like, I don't know. I mean, I know that's disgusting, but like, it just kind of makes me like George more somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Like, they were just young and disgusting.
Yeah. I said it to you when I came in as well, but like, I love the sections where he has the letters from the young fans.
Yeah.
Because the way they write is so funny. I don't know, like, I have no sort of indication of how accurately it's all like transcribed or whatever from what actually happened, but those letters are really, really funny. And I definitely, when I was younger, was like a massive just like fan girl of like One Direction were the band that I was a fan of. But I was also a fan of like Bastille, great band. I just like go into these bands like head and heart first, just like fully engaging with them. And it's so funny to be like, there's such a timeless, like it's such a like natural instinct to go for that I recognize like my younger self being like that. If I'd I probably did say stuff like that, but I've just deleted it all.
Why was so with the fandom of One Direction was all social media then?
And I've deleted every single trace of it that could be connected to me.
But was it that, like, what was it like at that time getting into that band and sort of being able to access them in a way on social media?
Like, really odd. Like, one of them replied to me on Twitter a few times, which is like not good for the whole like parasocial relationship construct. And you're like, but it's real now.
Yeah. Which one?
Niall.
Okay.
Oh, that's a shame.
He was my favourite.
Yeah.
He was my favourite. It's great for me.
Who's the one who's the The one who is really funny at the Oscars. With
that, oh, Liam Payne, that interview where he's...
That's something else.
Talking like a neck. Yeah. I got into them through... I just watched X Factor and, like, obviously it was like a teenage girl who didn't know what was going on with my emotions, but was just like, I love these boys.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just kind of, like, connected to them. No, that makes it sound like it was more deep than it was. Just like fancied them.
Yeah.
And then kind of like listened to their music, got like a bit obsessive with it. You know, would really like saw them live like once. My mum had to leave the room, which sounds like the sort of story that you would hear about the Beatles.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same.
The same.
Well, because it was too...
Too loud of everyone screaming.
Right,
no pissing on the chairs.
Okay.
I think. But then I got to a point when I think I was like 14 and I just was like, this has to stop. This
really?
Is immature. And I just threw away all my stuff and just never looked back.
What was the moment?
There was no trigger for it. Right. I just remember, I think I was like looking up at my wall and just seeing all these posters of these like boys and maybe there were like a few triggers along the way, but I have no idea what any of them were. It's just like one day I was like, I can't do this anymore. This is sad.
Wow. Mm. But I mean, yeah, I've got this vivid memory of being on holiday and there was a climbing frame area, like what's it called? A playground.
where
I really wanted to go to. And I remember running towards it and then stopping and I realised I was too old to go on.
Oh, God, that's heartbreaking.
But that sort of realised, I've got inhibitions now.
Bloody inhibitions.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, I suppose there's that... Is that kind of what happened with One Direction? Do you think you suddenly felt you were grown up? You'd grown past.
Yeah, I think that was it. I think I was like, I've grown past it, which is quite nice to now have a thing where it's almost like a boy band or like a music interest that like all my music interests before were kind of like boy bands of the sort of X Factor definition of a boy band type thing, where I only interacted with it in this way of like fan adoration, like not much depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now I'm like, oh, I actually think I kind of engage with this on like a few different levels.
Right.
And I don't know, it's
that's quite rare to probably work that out for yourself, though. I imagine most people, I mean, I can't remember any specific examples, but it's almost certainly the case that I said I liked something and someone said it was shit, and I said, yeah, it's been shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
So how do you feel about Harry Styles?
Kind of like it's so detached from the emotions of like my younger self. I don't really have any of those. It's literally like it was like a haze of like puberty.
Right.
And it's like now I'm out of it. I'm just like, oh, that's like a person who's making music. Now I like his music. I liked his latest album, but I'm not like obsessive over it. I'm really bad at like listening to music. I really like what I like. I like my old stuff that I go back to. Like,
yeah.
I will put the Beatles on. I have this, me and two of my friends used to, we haven't done it for a while, but we did like this Scrabble night where we'd play Scrabble, and I basically got a table for my flat and was so proud of it that I wanted like an excuse to invite people round. So I came up with this like idea of Scrabble because I thought I liked it. And then I played with two people who were actually quite good, and I was like, I hate this, but it had already become a tradition.
Yeah.
And we would kind of, we did it like every Saturday for a couple of nights, and it would always be like someone would put on their own music and after about like the second Scrabble game, someone else would just be like, right, let's just put on the Beatles now.
Oh, nice.
Like, we're just going to go back to it. And then that feels like how I feel like about listening to a lot of other music. Like, I try and make an effort to listen to new stuff or stuff people recommend to me, but quite often I'm like, I just want to go back to something that I know and that I find comforting.
Yeah.
I had that in COVID a lot. I went back to a lot of the old musical comfort blankets.
I was thinking like about the One Direction thing. Like, what happened to the fans who were... Do you think that happened to the Beatles fans of that era, that there was a point where they put childish things aside, or did they grow up with them a lot of the time?
I think they probably think of Harry Styles and now as the same way as they think of Wings, I suppose.
Yeah.
Do you reckon? Yeah.
I wonder if they did. I think... I don't know.
Mm.
It definitely feels like it was quite, like, oversaturated in terms of One Direction were like this thing that were kind of made and then like tried to be recreated. I feel like X Factor tried to like pump out more of that sort of vibe and were somewhat successful and somewhat weren't. But to kind of catch everyone in these different ages, I don't know if it felt like as kind of all consuming. It felt very easy to get out of. Whereas I wonder if you were a bit younger and it was like this kind of big thing that came out of nowhere and nothing had been like it before, whether you would then be connected to it like slightly more. Or maybe I'm the only One Direction fan who broke free. And the others are all tethered to
their earlier stuff. But I guess being 23 in, or being 13 in 1963 and being 23 in 1973 is a very radically different world. I mean, I guess the last 10 years have changed, but once you've broken through, you know, they're a band like One Direction or BTS, one of these bands that have obsessive fans that are sort of born through social media. The landscape isn't that different 10 years on, I suppose. So there's probably probably an element of that as well, I would imagine. Like, what was in the charts was so different in 1973 to what it would have been in 1963. Whereas now I would probably struggle to tell the difference between a One Direction song from 2012 and some, you know, a Liam Payne song from 2022.
Yeah, that's true. But it's amazing how obsessive the fans still were in the early 70s. You know, how upset they were about Paul marrying Linda and etc.
And that's what I was just thinking. I was just thinking, like, was there an element of it that felt more kind of like dangerous in terms of, like, if you're talking about like young girls interacting with this, more dangerous in the sense that like they could have actually believed it was possible because they have some sort of direct connection with them, or so they think on social media. But like reading those fan letters and the way they react and stuff, it still sounds like they think it's entirely possible that they could have ended up marrying Paul. And there's like a bit in the 1234 book about a girl who like comes and waits outside Paul's house, and she's like, well, that's probably where I'll find him. And then there are loads of other girls outside. She's like, what the hell? And it's just like this. It's still, maybe it triggers some sort of like animal instinct in you, no matter what, that you just think, surely it's different for me. But maybe it's narcissism.
But then they used to sort of write, they used to say in the Cavern days, before they got huge, but they would say, you know, don't forget us, girls, write to us, write postcards to us. And they would always write back these huge letters. That's probably the same as getting a sort of thumbs up DM back from, you know, One Direction or whatever, same kind of connection. And then they were sort of going and robbing Paul's house, thinking it was a completely fine thing to do in, like, 1969 or whatever. Any kind of response, I suppose. Now you would, you know, you would imagine if you managed a band of, like, teenage heartthrobs, you'd be like, just don't send anyone any messages.
Stay away.
Before we go, we'll ask you the question that we ask everyone on the podcast. Do you have a controversial Beatles opinion?
Yeah, I think so. I think Hey Jude should be longer. I reckon they could go for another couple of minutes and I'd still listen to the whole thing.
There are a lot of people on Twitter during Paul's Glastonbury set that would disagree with you.
I know this is probably the most inflammatory opinion that I could get away with.
Yeah. I think it's a great one.
It's good.
Yeah, just keep it on going.
It's a long song that you don't notice is long.
I remember when my dad first played it to me in the car, I remember him being like, and this song is like 7 minutes long. And me as a child being like, what? That can't be right. Like, I didn't know that was even legal. And then, like, him playing it and me being like, it just keeps going. So I kind of, like, loved that. And I actually just really love the song. Like, I find the lyrics touch me emotionally really significantly in a way that, like, doesn't really change even with its cultural context and, like, hearing it loads. Like, I always just, like, really love the lyrics. And I think I find, like, I just find it really moving, and I think I have a cold heart. So, like, hearing someone say, like, let people in is like, I'm like, oh my God, I do need to do that. I'm going to listen to, once I, like, when I, in December, whenever I'd like walk back from the tube, it was like a 14 minute walk and I'd just listen to it twice. I just really like it. Which is such a basic opinion. And I love the music video as well, because you can see them all panicking as everyone's like getting a bit too close. But
well, the Craig Brown chapter about the video is great. I haven't got to that yet. Yeah, it is really good.
It's also, I would say, peak Beautiful Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God. When his when that close up at the beginning.
I think as well, it's a great song because you know the others knew that this is a really good one.
Yeah.
They all probably would have begrudgingly been like, "Ugh, this is going to be the single."
That's a good one.
So when can we see your stormed Edinburgh show? You're doing some more dates soon, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm doing a run at Soho Theatre, which is from the 3rd to the 8th of the October. Of the October. Which is, as it stands, sold out. But I'm doing an extra show at the Leicester Square Theatre on the Friday the 11th of November. And that's one night only. And it would be so nice if people came, because it's an absolutely massive room. And you'll get to hear more about my cat.
Well, I can't recommend it enough. It's a phenomenal show, and so nice of you to come and talk to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
That was Anya Magliano's Personal Beatles. What a great guest.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. And if you want to see Anya's show, which has one of my favourite titles of a recent stand-up show, Absolutely No Worries If Not,
which
I say that very much rings true with me.
I say that an awful lot myself, yeah.
Yeah, it is one of my own personal favourite hours of stand-up I've seen for a long time.
Yeah, I saw her at the Fringe and it was just so amazing to see someone on stage who's just so comfortable being on stage. It's a real skill.
It's obviously patronising to go on about how young people are, but you know, she's so self-assured for someone who's doing their debut Edinburgh run. I mean, obviously, it's not easy. But yeah, fantastic. And thank you so much to her for coming on. That was a joy. We'll be back next week with John Higgs, who is a fantastic author who has a book called Love and Let Die, which is a sort of investigation of the British psyche through the cultural lens of the Beatles and James Bond. So lots to talk about there. It's a really fascinating book, and John is an absolutely lovely man.
Yeah, it's I loved the book. It was a really fresh insight on the Beatles, and not as a big Bond kind of guy, but I found it really, really interesting on that perspective. The thing I like about John Higgs's books and other things he's done, like his podcasts and interviews, is he is kind of interested in things that are quite mysterious or strange or can't really be explained. There's a brilliant podcast he did called Watling Street, which I'd really recommend, which is just a kind of great, you know, I try not to use the phrase psychogeography, but it is kind of, it is about the kind of importance of kind of history and place and time. And it's just a really, really good listen. And his book on Blake is good as well.
I really like his book on Blake, both of his books on Blake, but particularly The World versus William Blake, which came out last year. But yeah, if you want to know a bit more about his book ahead of next week, then I think he's doing an event in London on Monday, where he's doing a Q&A with Jeremy Deller, the artist.
Oh, great.
And Andrew O'Neill is doing some stand-up, so that should be a great evening.
Yeah, and I'm sure we've mentioned Jeremy Deller on the podcast before.
Yeah, but I think you probably have.
His film Everybody in the House, I think it's called Everybody in the House, is really, really worth a watch. Like history of rave culture, it's so good.
Yeah, fantastic. So we'll be back then. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon and get ad-free early episodes, and there'll be some bonus ones coming down the line. If you go to patreon.com/personalbeatles, you can follow us on all the old social media and stuff. We're on Instagram and Twitter and all the usual places at personalbeatles, and we'll be back next week with John Higgs.
And I really do have to say, this is everybody in the place, but I did want to just end with, I mentioned Bill Frisell in the intro and his album All We Are Saying. I found a lovely interview with him when that came out in 2011, and he talks about John's songs, and he says, "It is amazing on a technical, harmonic, melodic level. The songs are not all that complicated, but they transcend things. They touch everybody. This music was massively commercially successful, but it was because it was touching people." So I thought that was a very nice little quote that maybe, you know, I don't know, I just thought it was nice.
It's nice.
Yeah.
We'll leave you with that.
Yeah. Keep
bloody beetling on, KBBO.
Yeah, for God's sake.
And we'll see you next week.
Cheers, bye.
Money. Your Own Personal Beatles is presented by Jack Pelling and Robin Allender. The podcast artwork is done by Morgan Ritchie. It's produced by me, Jack Pelling, and is a Homespun Sounds production.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.